Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to Beyond the Matrix, daring you to think outside the box of convention, as I love to do, and bring you up to date on some of the issues that face our world, which, of course, we are more and more becoming aware of as the dudes that seem to be running the joint are determined to poison it, this beautiful Garden of Eden, to death. Talking about that with me today will be Rosalind Peterson, who I've had on more than once. She's the president of the Agricultural Defense Coalition. Agriculturedefensecoalition.org. And she's got another website called CaliforniaSkywatch.com. If you've heard of her, which I hope you have, you know that she is a tireless warrior for the oceans. She's an outspoken speaker for, again, the situation in the atmosphere with the trails, which I want to talk about. And just, there isn't anything that's going on this planet, as far as I'm concerned, that Rosalind doesn't know about and isn't working to help resolve. So please tell your friends, anyone, like I said on my site, if you care, you're there. You should be listening to this show today. Hi, Rosalind. Thank you for coming on.
Well, it's an honor and a privilege to be back on the air again with you today.
Oh, thank you. It's my honor and privilege. I wish I had really joyful, wonderful news to discuss with you, but actually I wanted to delve into some of the really dire things that are happening and to get your perspective on what it's going to take to make a dent in these disasters for the good side. So let's start with the issue at hand, the nuclear disaster in Japan. You know, I'm getting a little bit exasperated here listening to them. There was an article that showed the president, the prime minister of Japan, bowing and pausing in reflection of the disaster. And I'm asking, why are we bowing and pausing instead of resolving one of the, maybe the worst nuclear disaster on this planet?
Well, one of the things that I think is going on here is that the United States has been intent since the Bush administration early years, and now with Energy Secretary Chu from Lawrence Livermore Lab, there's been this drive now to make people believe that nuclear energy is clean and green. And there's a drive to put over 20 new nuclear power reactors, especially on the East Coast, into operation, even one planned for Fresno, California. The older plants are all having problems. You can go to the NRC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, website, and you can see where they've had multiple problems, or I've put some of them on my website. Under the AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org, you can go to the nuclear section, which I'm expanding almost daily at this point. But what is happening is that this revitalization, Obama put in his very last budget, $34 billion, with a B, billion dollars. And insurance companies won't insure these companies for liability because there's so many costs in building them, there's so many costs in overruns, there's so many costs accidents that they can't self-insure themselves, nor will any public insurance company insure them. So the Obama administration has put $34 billion in their budget in order to fund these small and larger nuclear power plants that they intend to put around the country. The map is on my website, but it's also on the NRC map of proposed nuclear power plants where they're considering permits. So in order for the United States and the people in the United States not to oppose this, they have taken the position that whatever radiation is being found is safe. They have stopped talking about the fact that no radiation is safe. And they have started talking about not protecting the American public from iodine-131, which is showing up in milk, products across the United States. Our children need to be able to take potassium iodide, for example, to interfere with radioactive iodine getting into the thyroid. The United States is not making this available to even areas where high levels are showing up, like in Alaska. And they refuse to divulge the location of where this potassium iodide would be found because they say it's national security, and I think it's because they weren't prepared and don't want to tell people that they weren't prepared for an accident, even if one happened here in the United States.
Well, there's a third hypothesis, and that is that it's a deliberate activity to reduce the population.
Well, this will cause increasing cancers and make people sick over time, any of the radioactivity coming over the United States from Japan. However, to trigger this kind of disaster means that everyone is affected worldwide. Nobody escapes from this. So you're not, it's far-fetched to believe that they're setting up this disaster to affect people on a worldwide basis, because it doesn't kill you outright right away. You start to get the symptoms in 15 or 20 years down the road. And the other thing is that we're playing Russian roulette with the very earth itself with this, because of this type of nuclear power plant, how unsafe it is, and the crises that could evolve from it. But it affects everyone. So if you wanted to get rid of some areas of the population, you're just going to have increasing health costs and cancer. This does not seem to be something I would think would be deliberately made to happen.
That's reassuring. How, but you can't help but notice the correlation between the Japan incident and the Gulf of Mexico oil disaster, and the complete inadequacy and inefficacy of the governments and these private corporations to do effective cleanup. I mean, you look at Japan, and they're standing around, and Michio Kaku, who is someone I respect, is saying, is giving the description of what it's going to take to seal up those facilities, and screaming that the Japan government is doing really nothing. And again, it's another BP Gulf of Mexico situation. TEPCO still has the voice on how to resolve this problem. The government of Japan is standing back. What do you think? What do you make of that?
Well, the nuclear industry doesn't really want you to know that disasters are happening, so of course they're going to try to cover it up as much as possible. That's why we've had this long period of time in which very little to nothing has been done, while these situations in Japan get worse. The Russians at least realized what the problem was almost immediately, and in other words, and wasted no time in entombing the Chernobyl area and the reactor there immediately to get a handle on this right away and stop this as quickly as possible. Japan and the United States and the other countries have not pressured Japan to put a stop to this and entomb those reactors right away. And all this talk about powering them up and reactivating them and all these things, this is nonsense, absolute nonsense, because the world population exposure keeps growing.
Right, and now they're talking about dropping some sticky resin on it to cover it up, and I'm like, why are they not dropping cement on it and entombing it?
I have no idea who's doing what to whom over there. I know that we're now starting to get involved, but I don't trust the United States to get its act together very quickly either. And in other words, and I think that we're slow to react. The Japanese government and TEPCO and these corporations are slow to react because they don't want to tell people how dangerous it really is. And you see, once you start to talk about a solution to this, then you have to start talking about why there has to be a drastic solution, because it's so dangerous.
Right, but are we talking with mental midgets? I mean, the longer they wait, the greater the disaster, the bigger the solution has to be.
That's correct, and the more the pollution spreads, not only in our oceans, across Japan, but around the world, And that's right. And I'm irritated because, you see, the United States doesn't want to come out and say how dangerous this is because they're afraid they won't have the nuclear power plant revitalization in the United States. You see, our economic interest here in saying that nuclear power is safe and green and clean isn't true, not only from the uranium mining through the processing of the nuclear fuel rods for use in these reactors, and then the leaks and other problems with these plants. They're not safe, and then we have no place to store the waste anyway. We have the nuclear fuel rods sitting all over the United States in open ponds with water in them. So, in other words, our safety is at stake here, too, and Energy Secretary Chu and President Obama want to build these new nuclear power plants. And this is, and so therefore they can't say how bad the disaster is.
Right, but on the other hand, it would behoove them to get the thing sealed up so that they can minimize the disaster, the effects of this disaster on the environment. But nobody's moving. I mean, to be talking about sticky resin, it's just an insult to my intelligence.
Well, it's an insult to my intelligence, too. But it also means that the United States has no intention of protecting the citizens of the United States and Hawaii, you know, as well as Hawaii and Alaska, which get it first. But they have no intention of protecting the themselves or the citizens of the United States because this $34 billion is so important to build more of these things. So what happens is that they're not willing to say, look, you have to take precautions. No amount of radiation is safe. They won't say that. They keep telling you, well, the more radiation we find, well, it's just safe and it's safe. It's not true. So when they come through, and we know this from going back to when we dropped the first bombs in Japan during World War II, we know what happened there. We know all of the health effects and problems. We know the health effects and problems just for the time it took for them to entomb Chernobyl, and that are continuing over all these years. So to say to the American people that this is all safe and it's safe, well, they're risking our children, especially who are more sensitive, and they're risking all of us. And just because they want to save the future of nuclear power in the United States, this is ridiculous.
This is very aggravating, Rosalind. I mean, I'm trying to be a sport here and look for the higher ground to keep my balance. But nuclear is the one thing that it just gets me back into my youth when I was 12 years old, back in the days when we had, well, I'm older than a lot of people, but back when they were making us do this ridiculous duck and cover under our desks in school in case of a nuclear bomb. And I remember saying to my teacher, but if nuclear bomb is the problem, is ducking under my desk the solution?
Well,
I was on the disruptor then.
Well, you know, my parents fought above ground nuclear testing at the Nevada test site. In other words, they decided that they were going to blow up and have these nuclear explosions above ground, and then they found out that the people were getting sick, the cows and the sheep were getting sick downwind, and eventually we got it stopped so that there was no more above ground testing of these atomic bombs. And then they know from underground testing that there's still releases that come up through the ground from time to time. But we are well aware of the hazards and dangers. Even Albert Einstein had talked about this when he was alive. And so when you start to say that this is all safe and green and sound, this is totally irritating. Totally.
Yeah, that's just the first word that I can come up with, and without getting extremely vulgar. All right.
Well,
so,
you know, the other thing is that the American people can put their foot down on this. You know, they can say, look, you're not protecting us. You're not getting over there, getting these entombed to protect our air supply, our ocean quality. You know, the debris now is washing from Japan up on our shores now. Some of it's going to be radioactive. And if the debris can get here, radioactive water can get here from Japan, too. So when we start to talk about, you know, in other words, this is a worldwide problem, and the United States is foot-dragging itself, and we can call our congressmen, our elected officials, and begin to put pressure on them to protect the American citizens here. And we have to do that. And this nonsense that everything is safe is just nonsense.
Well, there is an alarming trend in the alternative, shall we say, groups. And that is a lot of people prefer to not go there. It's too depressing. I want to think about higher things and pray that it all works out. And I find myself teetering between these, wanting to spread the information and also wanting to be in that place of knowing that in the end, the higher good prevails. But I am, like you, calling people to action. And so many people have lost hope that there really is any effect from taking these actions. So you are a hero for me because you never stop fighting.
Well, what do you want? In other words, do you want to face your children and your youngsters and your infants dying of cancer from thyroid, getting the radioactive iodine-131 in their thyroids? Do you want to face the health effects down the road that this is going to cause in 15, 20 years? In other words, do we want to face this, or do we want to say, no, let's take some action and get this taken care of, and then we'll find another way to power energy and, you know, for energy power in the United States that's not nearly as costly or long-lasting? We can do this. I mean, you know what? The powers that be, the Obama administration, the powers that be, our elected officials, they want us to go away. They want us to go climb into our hole and go away and not react to this. And, you know, it's time that we start to say we're going to, you know, take action here instead of suffering the consequences one at a time in our own homes as we die from these things. I mean, you know, in other words, it's the quality of our life. And we have a right and we have a stake in saying. And we don't, I don't want Energy Secretary Chu, an energy god from Lawrence Livermore Lab, he was head there for many years, to make decisions about whether I should have genetically modified food or a nuclear power plant in my backyard. I don't want him doing that, and I don't want them telling me that this is safe when we know that it isn't. So, you know, in other words, we have to speak up. That's
so what are you proposing for people who are listening now? Because we are we have a lot of people listening to this program today, and some of them are, let's say, disempowered and worried and frightened, and you represent for me a voice of clarity of what people can do immediately to get out of that disempowerment and start taking action. So what are you proposing, either through your organizations or you personally, that they take action to do?
Well, you're going to have to go and step up at the local level and at the federal level with your elected officials, both your U.S. House members and your senators, and it means putting a lot of pressure on them. When they come home and they want you to vote for them, you're going to say, no, we don't like your position on this. You have to call them up and push them to take action to entomb this plant and stop saying that this is safe. Now, the news media is a culprit here, and I've been following this issue very, very closely. And all of a sudden, what I noticed is that all these Nuclear Regulatory Commission guys and all this say, oh, no, the level we're seeing is safe. Well, first of all, if you go back through any historical information and you look at this, there's no level that's safe. The second information is that the news media is now pushing this theory that our fears are getting the best of us, that we're afraid and it makes us irrational. So therefore, the American people are rational for having concerns about this. Well, we have to hit back at the news media and say, no, no, the fears, in other words, what's going on in Japan doesn't make us irrational because we know the hazards and the dangers. It makes us mad that we're not taking action quickly to protect the American people and that the U.S. is not protecting us by taking the positions that they're taking. So this is the message we have to send back, that we're not cowering in our homes in fear. We're angry because we're being made the scapegoats, that somehow we're nuts because we think that this might be dangerous from what we've read in historical information on this subject and from the results of the dangers from where we can see what happened at Chernobyl and when we dropped the bombs on Japan initially in World War II. We already know those studies are done and connected. The information hasn't changed. So therefore, we have to tell the news media and write to them and put pressure on them that it isn't, we're not hysterically and having fear. We understand the dangers and want our elected officials to solve the problem here. And they can do it. And they can put pressure on Japan and they can get those entombed and stop the radiation leaks. But see, we're motivated because of our interest in building more plants.
And so we have to say, the government, not we the people.
Yeah. So, in other words, I don't want the news media telling me that I'm, you know, cowering in my house and hysterical. I want them to know that we have the real information about the dangers of radioactivity, and we've had it for years because we know the results of Chernobyl as one example, and downwind, how it's increased cancers downwind. We just happen to be more directly downwind here in California and in the United States. And for our government not to take action to say, look, this is a danger and we're going to step in and entomb these things, help the Japanese entomb these things, is criminal. We have to let them know that this is not acceptable and that the media can't make us the scapegoat in saying that we're hysterical people here in the United States. I refuse to accept that, and they've been pushing that for the last week.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Right.
You know, we aren't getting that that message of people are just overly paranoid. It's almost disappeared completely, the nuclear situation. It's just been completely overtaken by the Libya situation, the completely unjustified illegal attack of the so-called allies on that country. And
I agree.
Yeah, and by the way, they're dropping depleted uranium there, left and right. We don't have enough nuclear energy.
I'm sure that they
are.
I'm sure that they're using it. It's in the U.S. military arsenal.
So
absolutely. So, but here's the thing: I saw Dennis Kucinich on C-SPAN a couple of days ago. And anyone could go and listen to his speech. And he outlined in about 50 minutes exactly what's wrong with our being in Libya. And I thought it was excellent. And anyone that wants to go to C-SPAN, they can go and see that clip from his from the U.S. House. There's a clip. And he talked about it. And it's coherent and intelligent and wonderful. And he talks about all the reasons we shouldn't be there. And you know what? We're going to have to pay, you know, right now we're cutting collective bargaining rights for police and fire and teachers. We're going to lay off people. We're laying off teachers several hundred thousand in the last few months. We're cutting back on food for the poor. We're cutting back on senior citizens. We want to cut back on Social Security payments and Medicare and all these things. And why? Because now we're going to fund almost $1 billion by the time they get back in a new bombing missions in Libya. You know, one of our missiles over there that they've been using, just one, is 1.5 million every time we explode one of those. 1.5 million. And I think at latest count, we had used
a lot of money on war. Hey, yeah. Well, you remember Eisenhower said, "Beware of the military industrial complex."
Industrial complex.
Beware, beware. And in fact, you know, my motto is wage peace. But it looks like we are now in three active wars that are supposedly by the Allies, but we know that it's basically the United States. And how many more can there be? What is the objective here in the Middle East? I mean, we're going to just, what's going to happen? Plenty of people agree that these these rebellions and these uprisings are backed by, let's say, interests from abroad. And there is a general trend in the Middle East that surrounds Israel, by the way, of course. To what end? How do you perceive the end here?
I have no idea at this point. But the head of the new head of the Libya opposition is just absolutely fascinating. The head of the Libya opposition is a professor from Washington State who now is making deals to sell Libyan oil to other countries. It's absolutely fascinating. And he says, well, he says, I don't know how I got from being a professor here. He's from Libya originally. But he says, I don't know how I got from being a professor here to making oil deals with other countries when we overthrow Gaddafi. And I looked at this and I thought, well, how did he get there? I mean, what all of a sudden made him the leader to make oil deals and set up a bank in Libya to make these oil deals and sell Libyan oil? And see, the other thing that they're mad about Gaddafi about is in 2009, Gaddafi decided that he would charge American and other oil companies more money so that it would go to his country. And so they were doing a little bit of nationalizing the oil. And you see, we got upset about that because that upset the apple cart. We didn't want the money to go to the people in Libya. We wanted the money to, you know, the oil companies to keep enriching themselves. So what I see is any country that has oil, we're definitely interested in it.
You think?
I think.
You know, I saw an interesting clip of Wesley Clark, speaking in 2003. And he said that he was told by Rumsfeld, well, we're going in. And when he said, why are we actually in Iraq? And he went on to say that he was told that, I think this was in a congressional hearing, that the intention was to go and just take the whole Middle East within 7 years. And he listed Libya as one of the focused, intended targets for takeover. Have you seen that?
I have no doubt. I really don't. I don't have any doubt that this is what this is all about. And no matter what it costs us in treasure and in, you know, in other words, no other country could step into these countries and has the arms, has the wherewithal to go fight these wars. We're the only country. I'm serious about this. So we have to fund it. You don't see any money coming in from any of these other countries that are going to go fight these battles. And when they send a few airplanes, it's a few airplanes that we supplied to them under some arms agreement years ago. We control NATO. So this is a U.S. operation any way you cut it, and we're paying for it.
Through blood, sweat, and tears. It's really very, very tragic. I hear people saying, well, you know, that we have to protect the innocent people. And I'm like, can you wake up now? This is not about protecting innocent people in an uprising situation. This is a planned coup where the United States created a skirmish so they could go in.
Absolutely. And you see, we only want people in positions of power that will deal with us on oil and our companies and all this. This is all about U.S. interests. This is and who we can control. And even if we set up a dictatorship that can be worse than what's there, that as long as we have power and control of the oil and their other natural resources. Just look at Afghanistan. And Secretary Gates was talking about Afghanistan in a congressional hearing, I think about a week or maybe less, but anyway. And so they were asking him about Afghanistan and the issues. And he says, well, they have a lot of natural resources there, and we want to make sure that they're, in his words, exploited the way we think they should be.
Wow, that's
and
intense.
I looked at this and I thought to myself, well, they have some metals, they have other things, gold mines of things there that could be exploited by the United States and its corporations. Well, when they discovered under the Bush administration that all these natural resources were there, well, then there was no reason to leave because we wanted to be the ones to exploit it.
always reminding people that the excuse the United States used this time around for Afghanistan was because they were looking for the slimy Osama bin Laden, who is probably believed to still be hooked up to a dialysis machine plugged into the side of a mountain somewhere.
Well, think about this. We don't really want to go after Osama bin Laden. The United States government isn't interested, and I believe that the reason that they don't want to have anything happen to Osama bin Laden is then our terrorist war would be over.
Exactly.
You see, he makes the complete foil to keep us in war. So, when we say we can't find him, I have my serious doubts about this. Only because it keeps the United States government in a position to keep waging war because we're looking for Osama bin Laden and we can raise him up whenever we want an excuse to keep our wars going.
That's right.
If we wanted to find him, and I'm willing to bet with our state of technology, we know exactly where he is. But every so often we want Osama bin Laden to show up with a press release or a conference or a tape or something so that we can reactivate our war on terrorism. And what better way to do it than to keep him alive? And I mean, I may seem cynical on this, but I really think that this is what's going on.
I do too. In fact, I first of all don't believe that he's still alive because there's so much evidence to the contrary. But that would take a lot of time to go into. Nonetheless,
but you see, whether he's dead or alive doesn't matter. It matters that we keep him alive in some form, without direct proof, so that the American public is duped into staying in these wars.
Right, just like we keep the fear of the devil alive, so that people will be obedient to doctrines that teach them how to avoid getting snagged by being. Good religious followers.
Absolutely.
I don't know, man. All right, well, let's segue from the military, because I think that it's pretty clear what's going on in Libya. But since we are talking about the military, I would like to discuss with you, especially since you have so much expertise about it, the latest Navy explorations, games, warfare in the oceans, and the latest dolphin kill because of those. What can you elucidate about what's going on?
Well, the United States Navy 5-year warfare testing programs are increasing to where there's now 16 different 5-year warfare testing programs in the Atlantic, the Pacific, and the Gulf of Mexico. There are some that haven't been initiated yet, but the final environmental impact statement for the Gulf of Mexico was finalized, and they'll be starting their program in the Gulf of Mexico. And this means sonar testing, bomb blast, missile exercises, submarine exercise warfare, use of toxic chemicals, electromagnetic weapon systems testing, and a whole host and range of other things, which they have put into various environmental impact statements, which are online on my website on the U.S. Navy section. I put the government documents up so that you can just see the maps and United States maps and the warfare areas. Everything is on there, but they're all public record on the U.S. Navy warfare websites as well. The 11.7 million marine mammals that the Navy intends to wipe out during the course of these 5-year programs has increased because they're adding new 5-year warfare testing areas, both in the Pacific and the Atlantic, which will increase that number directly from more warfare games and testing. California Northwest Training Range Complex, involving Northern California, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. The 5-year warfare testing program went into effect last November 2010. We were the last group that was holding out and battling with the U.S. Navy on not implementing this program and also in protecting marine mammal sanctuaries, marine reserves, and breeding habitat areas. The Navy and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, even though Dr. Jane Lubchenco in a meeting here stated that they didn't know the real effects of sonar on marine mammals, approved the Navy warfare testing program without protecting any National Marine Sanctuaries here along the Pacific coast, all the way up from, in other words, Washington, Canada, all the way down through Southern California. No areas are now protected from Navy warfare testing. The Navy is going to be using sonar during the marine mammal whale migrations. They're going to be using it during the salmon migrations, everything. So the Navy has been allowed now to go ahead without any substantial opposition anywhere with these programs. And the devastation of our oceans is at hand as the U.S. Navy goes to war, not only in other countries, but on our own oceans against our own marine mammals, the fishing industry, the tourism industry, and whatever's left of our oceans. The Navy's going to decimate it.
All right, Rosalyn. Obviously, there's more going on here than just getting ready for the so-called eventual terrorist attack. I mean, this is overkill in every sense of the word, a millionfold. What do you understand is really beneath this, behind this ridiculous, violent aggression against this planet?
Well, I think that there's three things. I think, one, we have unmitigated arrogance that we can go to war on ourselves and our planet and our oceans and not have detrimental consequences. I think the second issue is that they want to reduce the American citizen population to one of a third-class nation, third-world nation. And we're underway to do that because America's the last stand against, in other words, worldwide globalization, and which is going to impact everyone. In other words, President Bush the First talked about the New World Order. Well, globalization is the New World Order. And in globalization, we all lose. But the only way to do it was to turn both Canada and the United States populations into third world countries and have us as slave labor where there is no high paid anyone except a few corporate executives until they're expendable and corporations until they're expendable and no longer needed. But it's to make America a third world country. And to do that, you impact our health, you impact the oceans, you impact air quality, you impact the jobs. In other words, turning this population against public workers who have benefits or collective bargaining, against turning one segment of a population against the other, so that anyone with a job that has benefits or can get out of the rut of you know, a low-paying job to a higher-paying job is being undermined right at this point. Once you turn your workers into not able to bargain for their wages, then wages are going to drop to minimum wage for everyone. The quality of the work will go down, low-paid, in other words, your minimum wage will drop. The whole thing is under attack. And I really believe that once that happens, our position in the United States as being a country other than a slave state to the corporations is going to, that's where we're going to be. We'll be a slave state to the corporate globalization. And that's the intent.
But to what end? I mean, so great. You want to create a slave labor force of completely disempowered citizens, but you've still destroyed the beauty that you too, I'm speaking of the so-called power, will no longer be able to enjoy. I don't, like you said before, they have to live on the planet too. What's the deal?
Well, you know, I think that there's an arrogance that a few can rule, an arrogance that we should all be slave labor. I think that there's an arrogance afoot here. And I think there's an arrogance that we can do upper atmospheric testing in our atmosphere, that we can bomb the oceans, that we can test all these things, and we can still survive. And eventually, I don't know who's going to pay for all this. I don't know who's going to, in other words, we're not going to withstand this. There's the destruction of the Earth, but, you know, there's a wild theory going around that everyone's going to go, you know, that the elite are going to go underground, destroy the Earth, and then pop up and going to live in this world with less people. Well, first of all, if they're going to go underground, they got to live there with their children and their grandchildren and everybody else in these underground whatever. Eventually, they're going to have to come back up. And my thought to you is, well, just who is then going to run the military? Who's going to, in other words, live on the planet? It won't be livable. And just who's going to live here and make sure that their yachts and their pristine islands and all of this are, you know, who's going to maintain their yachts and maintain everything? What slave labor is going to be left to do this and keep them in this grand lifestyle that they have been accustomed to? And what, you're going to have some military guys hanging around and some few elites hanging around? Who's going to do their food? How is their food ever going to be fit to eat? I mean, in other words, if you destroy the Earth and there's nothing on it of beauty and everything is dead and dying, then how are you going to pop up someday and say, oh, we're going to be the new rulers? I mean,
well,
this is insanity.
People have asked me quite a lot about my position on survival kits and underground bunkers and all that. And my answer is, you know, if it's time to go personally, since I have no fear of that process, I would much rather move on to another dimension or another lifetime or whatever that other will be on the other side, rather than cling to a disaster situation where survival will be so bleak. I don't play that out in my mind. I don't see that. I kind of am ready for something miraculous to happen. I don't believe in the Messiah, but I do believe that we are at the breaking point here, and there is urgent need for a huge shift in human consciousness to turn things around. And I believe that's possible.
I think that that's necessary. And also, you know, we were given a grand gift. You know, all of us, you and I and everybody on the planet was given a grand gift. We were given life. And
exactly.
We were given an Earth that provides for everything we need. It's an amazing thing. In other words, provides the water, the food, in other words, the sun and direct sunlight and trees and everything we need to survive here in a wonderful place of great beauty and great benefit to all mankind. And, you know, I think that, you know, people talk about God and they talk about, well, we're going to go to heaven or, you know, when we die, we want to go to heaven. Well, God put us on his earth in one sense. And if you say that this is heaven, in other words, what better place we can see in color, breathe, think, run, dance, love, all these emotions and have a place where there's food and all these things. God put us on heaven. You know, my mom, a preacher one time, he came to the house and he gave mom a photograph of a little house with a picket fence around us. And he says, well, he says, don't you want to go and, you know, be with God, you know, when you die, you know, and live like this? And mom pointed to the backyard and she said, I am in heaven. She says, and I don't have any grass, so I don't have to mow a lawn and paint the picket fence. She said, I've got the deer and the trees, and I've got beauty of nature around me. This is God's heaven. He's going to judge us on how we take care of it. I mean, you know, in other words, that's my feeling here.
All right, so that's my feeling as well. And it's a constant challenge to put yourself into the state of mind and the environment where you daily recognize that miracle and not get lost. Like I said earlier, the beginning of our conversation, there's a delicate tightrope that we're walking. One is passivity, which is I can't deal with the negativity. I want to stay in la-la land. And the other is I want to work to help affect change, but I can't lose my personal perspective on how I manifest beauty and wonder in my life. It's a tightrope.
Of course it is. And that's the test for all of us, is what kind of life we want to live. That's the values we have to deal with. I have people call me up all the time and send me emails on where they can move so that they can go live in you know, some great utopia. And I said, no, you're going to have to stand and fight. You're going to have to fight for what you want. And if you want this beautiful place, you're going to have to fight for it. And if you're not willing to do that, then I've got news for you. There is no place to run.
In fact, there's another theory going around that the motherships are on their way and they're going to scoop the people up and take them to another place. And I'm like, excuse me, but hello, what we would do if we were taken away to another place would be to destroy that place. We have to fix this place. This is our place. This is our karma. And not escaping this planet, but healing this planet is what we're here to do.
That's correct. And why ruin? Where are you going to go that's going to have anything like we experience and have here? I mean, this is a wonderful place. In other words, and we have benefited from living in this beautiful, wonderful environment. And so we have to learn how to take care of it, not destroy it. That's where we are.
So besides the many innovative things that are happening now, I have to say I'm watching some pretty exciting developments in eco technology and consciousness overall. It is really important for people to recognize that only by continually pounding away at what you've got to work with, which is the media, your government representatives, your neighbors, constantly pounding away, no matter how difficult that is, to get the message out to anyone you can talk to of what to do to help save this planet.
Yes, and I think that we're not asking people to take up, you know, the issue of every topic. In other words, certainly there's a myriad of topics. There's a myriad of problems facing us every day. And I look at it from the perspective that if each of us just made one effort, you know, an effort every 3 days, made an effort to write a letter, made an effort for telephone calls, if everyone started to make an effort, not to, you know, in other words, not to, they don't have to devote their life to it, but if you pick the issues that are important to you and make an effort to say no, then we can start to generate change. And it's like there's a group in Sonoma County. And, I mean, there's a group of 20 Republican women who are just absolutely amazing on how much they have accomplished with the different issues that they've picked up over time. And they're going to be picking up this issue as well as the jets and our man-made clouds. Very shortly, they learned about this and have decided to pick it up. And they've been an amazing group who have impacted other people. And so you can join people who have a mission, join people who have like interests and make a difference. You don't have to be by yourself.
Yes, and with the question of writing letters, you know, it's not that hard anymore. The petitions are out there. You've got, you know, all it requires really is pushing a little button on your keyboard. So the reluctance or complete lack of involvement is really indicative of passivity and, well, I might get some feedback on this, but I... As I said, it's one thing to want to keep your mind in a happier place and not deal with these issues. And it's another thing to be in passivity where you are not part of a collective consciousness working toward change, but simply isolating yourself in your little world and saying, well, okay, let the world fix itself. I'm going to go on an island and swing on a hammock.
But the radioactivity coming from Japan is here. It's around the world. Yeah. If you look at the decline in honeybees, it's going to have an impact on our food supplies more and more because we're not getting rid of the insecticides that are causing their decline, for example. If we decide that we're going to live in our own little world, our own little world is going to be impacted in every day by what's happening outside. And so if we only just blog our frustrations into the blogosphere and don't call Congress and our elected officials in Washington at the toll-free number, 1-866-22-00044. It's a toll-free number. Can reach any U.S. senator or congressman in Washington, D.C. Yes, it's 1-866-22-00044. It's not even going to cost you any money to make the call. Our elected officials have websites. You can write to them, send them letters. You can call their offices. You can make a difference. And when they come to Glad Hand with their spaghetti feeds in your local community, you can go and raise important issues with them and say, look, unless you vote a certain way, we vote. No matter how much money a corporation is going to spend, we are the voters. We are the people on the ground who are going to work for you or not work for you. And right now, if you don't get going on this, we're not working for you. We're going to work for somebody who's going to vote our will. And this is the message we have to take to our elected officials. And this is at every level. In other words, county level, city level, state level, whatever level, we have to step up. And we can do it.
I wish we had more time, Rosalind. I wanted to talk about the increasing chemtrail situation. We've got 2 or 3 minutes. Can you give us... I've heard that we are now starting to see black chemtrails. Have you any information about that?
We've been seeing black trails, which I believe is carbon black or soot, since 2003 when I first started looking at the skies really intently. It's getting worse. We have less blue skies now. We have less sunlight hitting the ground, which means a reduction in solar power panel production. We have increases in lack of vitamin D from lack of direct sunlight reaching the earth, and the human health effects, which is on the sunlight section of my website, CaliforniaSkyWatch.com. I hope that all of you will take a look at the information, and also more and more people are going to be working toward putting a stop to these man-made clouds and jet trails that are impacting our environment.
This is one of the most urgent situations on our planet, and I first noticed the chemtrails back in 2000, and they become daily more and more exaggerated to the point that some people are reporting not seeing blue sky at all anymore.
Opaque. That's correct. And that's the case here most of the time.
So a great thing to do. We've got a few representatives who have, I think Dennis, if I'm not mistaken, Dennis Kucinich tried to bring this up before, and he's a man who is worth listening to. Pay attention to this man. And like Rosalind said, check him out. He makes sense. He speaks with great clarity, and he speaks for this planet. So the number to talk to your government officials is 866. That's 866-22-0044. And you've been listening to my friend and fellow warrior, Rosalind Peterson. She's the president of the Agriculture Defense Coalition. She's also, read about her on her website, Agriculture, so I keep making this mistake, AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org. She has another website, CaliforniaSkyWatch.com. She's giving you the straight information, pulling no punches, about just about everything that concerns us at this moment. Geoengineering, genetically modified everything, the bees, the bats. The wharf against the oceans. She's a true warrior for planet Earth. Thank you, Rosalind. It's always an honor. And however difficult to talk about these things, it's always important to be able to keep the knowledge coming forward.
Well, thank you for your kind words. And you, too, are a true warrior as well.
Thanks, Rosalind. All right, everybody, don't forget to look up Rosalind Peterson. And by the way, send her your support letters too. She's rallying people all over the country, and we all need people behind the people who are in the front lines. So again, thank you, Rosalind. By the way, everyone, remember, I'm now going on an every other week format, so next week I have no show. And I know you'll miss me, but I'll be back the week after that. How's that for self-confidence? This is Patricia Corey. By the way, the book, before we leave you, it's looks like it's doing really well on Amazon, to the point that they're saying they can't even ship it until August. So I have got some first copies here available on my website. If you'd like to get your copy, you can go ahead and order from me now. All right, everyone, thank you. I love you. I send you hope, empowerment, and determination. Get your arses out of your seats and get to work for this goddess Gaia. She's calling her children for help. That's it for today. Nanu, nanu. This is Patricia signing out.